remarkable. He comes up towards the winning line under Davy Russell to win his second round Oxhealth Grand National. Tiger Roll joins the greats.
Desert Orchid, watch history being made. Rolls of applause. The king's in his counting house. Desert Orchid's blooming. He's been here before. Desert Orchid the winner.
Heading down towards the last ride in the champion hurdle, and it's Annie Power comes towards it now. She's about four lengths clear. Viciosi jumped it perfectly. Annie Power heads up the hill. It's going to be third time lucky for her.
Welcome along to the brand new, groundbreaking, and game-changing From the Horse's Mouth podcast from Paddy Power Media. On today's podcast, we will have an interview with broadcasting legend Cornelius Lycett, and we'll also be giving our tips ahead of a busy festive period, including who we think will be crowned King of Kempton. Bit of a mouthful, that one, on St. Stephen's Day. That's all to come, and so much more right here on From the Horse's Mouth with me, Paddy Power. I'm not on my own, don't worry, lads. You don't have to listen to me waffle on for half an hour or whatever, however long this podcast is going to be. I'm also joined in the studio by Ruby Walsh. He's our first guest. His racing CV is longer than War and Peace. He's ridden loads of winners. He's been champion jockey in Ireland. Ever champion jockey in the UK?
Nope.
No, champion jockey in Ireland loads of times. And he's won the King George five times. That's a record, I think. And pretty much loads of races, so I don't want to make his head too big. He even had a song written about him, The Ballad of Ruby Walsh. I know he loves the Kaiser Chiefs song. That's actually his ringtone. So it's Ruby Walsh. Welcome, Ruby.
Are you okay having myself and our other guest, since you haven't introduced
him yet? Introduce him now, will you stop?
On your show.
Count yourselves lucky that you're here at all, right?
Can I ask you one question, though? What ground are we breaking?
What ground are we breaking? I don't know. We might break some ground here. It's the first ever podcast, I'd say, is it?
All right. Then what's the game changer going to be?
We're going to change the way podcasts work.
Right, that's okay.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, welcome, Tom Nugent. So Ruby's going to be great crack on this.
Paddy's
anyway.
Rattled already. He's on
I'm
the
rattled
back foot.
Already. Yeah. About the back foot. So Tom Nugent, you might recognise him from Paddy Power's social media videos and channels and things like that. He's the guy with the really big head. He's that's really me. Tall. Yeah. He's a star of such amazing broadcasts as The VAR Room.
I'm basically here so you can go skiing in January
and
I can take over
actually,
from
yeah,
here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm just, that's kind of a sub, really.
Okay.
Who's taking over for me when I go skiing?
You're not going skiing. Yeah. Everyone knows you're not going skiing.
Well, look, there is a small bit of structure to this show. Loads of stuff happened in the world of racing. Loads of stuff happened in the world, but in the world of racing, first of all, a bit of a debacle at Sandown.
Technically, Paddy, you are correct and right there. The jockey's got away scot-free for breaking the rules. What you have to learn from the whole experience or outing or whatever it was is that the procedure was wrong. Obviously, the colour of the flag is wrong. The jockeys didn't see it. It was one whole mess. There was no winner in this. Did they really deserve the suspensions they got for what the crime they committed? No, they didn't. Just change the colour of the flag and we'll move on. I'm 25 years riding. I never rode in a race that was stopped. This is something that happens so, so seldom.
Okay, and there was a bit of niggle. I saw some niggle. This has obviously to do with that, about the fact that somebody tweeted that we still have a bloke with a flag in a field at dusk waving to try and stop a race in this day of technology. Ruby, when you're a jockey, is it hard to see that? Like, hard to see the flag or whatever?
No, they said they didn't see it, but I'd say they did see it because they bypassed the fence. So did they just decide they were going to bypass the fence or not? I'd say they saw it and used that as a technicality to get off their suspensions. Now, having said that,
is that just mob think then? Say, well, I'm going to ride the race if he is, like, just in case.
Well, you can't. If you pull up, to pull up is a huge decision. If you pull up and you're not certain, so the yellow flag is there wasn't even been waved, it's been held up, and there's one guy holding the yellow flag. You could see the black screens in the distance. The guy's natural reaction was to bypass the fence and then bypass the black screens. Now, I put it this way, Paddy. You're driving down along the road and there's a guy standing in a yellow high-vis jacket with a yellow flag. What would you do?
Don't know. I'd probably slow down and look around and see what's going on around me. Like,
continue on, drive around him.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a guy standing on the road wearing a red jacket and waving a red flag. What are you going to do?
Probably the same. I'd slow down like and have a look, but
so
again,
you wouldn't stop for the red and take caution with the yellow.
Well, I don't know. Would you?
How about you?
Yeah, no, I'd agree with you.
Yeah,
as a fully licensed driver.
Yeah, I think that it should be just a natural reaction. And a guy standing wearing a red bib waving a red flag means, oh, red, caution, stop.
Okay, but okay, that's fine. But the rules are the other way. So it's just say the jockeys got off the ban. Is that right or wrong?
They did. They got off, and they got off on technicality because there was a precedent set with a stop race procedure in Perth a while back, and they basically fought the same case. And that's how they get off, as those happen in law all over the world, in the legal world. So I can see how they got off. I think the procedure is wrong. you could question whether Sandown needed to stop the race in the first place, but they made that decision, that that's their choice. The race should have been void within 3 minutes, because that's what the flag says. It took the Shores almost 25. That decision should have been made straight away. And I think they need to change the colour of the flag. I think it's a good idea to be able to stop a race. I just don't think they've mastered the full procedure yet. And for me, red flags and more.
Should
than
they have like audio equipment in the jockeys' helmets where you could just go, right, lads, stop?
You could, that's fine. But I mean, what's to stop somebody hacking into that system in this day and age and telling,
that'd be good crack,
and telling so-and-so, by the way, the two behind you are drunk, the only danger has fallen, something else is going well. That becomes tactical then. There's a right. Of course you could hack into it. I don't think you could need that for that reason, but I just think the procedure to stop the race should be more than one person holding the yellow flag.
So red flag could work.
Yeah, multiple guys with red flags, race stops.
It's all about the colours. Right, anyway, listen, Gary Lineker, complete shocker. And do you watch Sports Personality of the Year? Have you ever been on that? Have you ever been nominated for that, Ruby?
Nope.
No, have you, Tom?
Weirdly, no.
Neither have I.
But, yeah,
yeah. He had a shocker. He announced the winner early in the show, kind of by mistake. Did he know the winner, or is it just a slip of the tongue? I wonder.
Like, I'm guessing he opened the wrong envelope or something like that.
Well, no, he introed. He said, and they were joined by these cricketers, like whatever the names of the cricketers were. Ben Stokes is one of them. And he said, and big award winner Ben Stokes. And he's no need to say it, but he said it.
Is he like Ron Burgundy? Somebody got to the teleprompter and he just reads whatever comes up?
Probably. He just had a bit of a mare. He's got a bit of stick about it. I'm not sure it makes a huge difference anyway, because I think he was short odds. But have you had any shockers yourself, Ruby, live on air? You've done a good bit of broadcasting. Well, you've done a few while you were a jockey, but since then you've done a lot.
Oh, yeah. I was talking last week on Racing TV, and I was watching the closed circuit television from Ferry House, and the screen for Racing TV was like, wasn't even showing the race I was talking about.
Okay.
Rabbit in the way of talking about that screen over there, but I should have been watching that one.
Okay, good man. Tom, anything to report?
Bloopers wise?
Yeah.
Not really, no. I'm not famous enough.
I still can't pronounce Abracabat. What's his name?
Abracadabra.
Abracadabra. I don't know. Keep getting that.
Not Abracababra, anyway.
Yeah, I'd won when during Galway race 1 year, and I probably shouldn't tell this, but I'll tell you anyway. And it was up real late. I was meant to be on the radio the next morning on Radio 1, which is obviously a huge station in Ireland, on Morning Ireland, talking about betting tax, and quite a serious interview, right? And so our CEO and chairman and founder and everybody, all these like top dogs were out on the lash at Galway. And we were all out together, and we're back in the residence bar in the hotel, and I was there chatting, talking absolute shite to somebody. And at about 4 a.m, and the boss at the time, Patrick Kennedy, came over to me and says, "You're on the radio in a couple of hours. If I was you, I wouldn't be sitting down here having a pint." And I just turned around and said, "Well, you're not me, are you?" And like, thanks be to God, I think it went okay. It was a bit of a Brian Cowan interview with the old gravelly voice and that, but it got away with it.
Could you imagine sending him out to discuss betting tax and all those important issues? I mean, had nobody else in this place?
Like, he's actually not bad under pressure, in fairness. Yeah. He can turn it on. But
that wasn't my finest
brave
moment.
Enough, yeah.
Stick to the script, Paddy.
Yeah.
I know, exactly. Anyway, listen, every week on The Horse's Mouth, we're going to be joined by one of the biggest names in the world of racing. And we've set the bar extremely high for our first podcast. And we welcome broadcasting legend Cornelius Lysa to the show. Hello, Cornelius, and welcome.
You flatterer.
Well, you know, you are in the news of the recent times, Cornelius. So I thought I'd start you off with a bit of flattery. But I do need to ask you, if you don't mind me starting with the old body blow, what's going on with the BBC?
Probably ought to ask the BBC, really. A little bit of a changing of the guard, so I won't be working from them from the end of the jump season onwards. So more time to do other things, I suppose. But I'm sure people will say the BBC's fallen out of love with racing. They've probably been saying it for a bit in some respects, and. You know, without meaning to sound like the foreign secretary, I think that's probably for them to answer rather than for me to answer.
Is there any kind of picture postcard moments or big names in particular where you kind of go, that was a defining story of my time in the British mainstream media covering the sport of racing?
Well, I don't know about because there have been obviously so many cracking moments. You know, particularly over jumps, because there's just horse after horse after horse. Every time you come up with a favourite, you then come up with another one that you like just as much. The horse that I always cite is Jadami from the 1990s, because for me, he was what steeplechasing is all about. You know, going way back to the 18th century when, what was it, Mr. O'Callaghan and Mr. I forget the other guy. One was called Cornelius anyway, galloped across the County Cork countryside from Butterfont to Dunnerail, and that's where steeplechasing started. You know, the thing about Jadami, he represented much of the grassroots normality of horse racing in these islands, which and then he went and won the Cheltenham Gold Cup in the 90s and was a real star on both sides of the Irish Sea. I don't think there are many other British trained horses that have had bars named after them at Leopardstown. So Jadami was my personal favourite, but you know, that's you know, it's so unfair, isn't it, really? Because the you know, we mentioned Desert Orchid and Corto and Denman and Masterminded, and you know, on goes the list. But you know, this time of the year, it's good to look at that King George list because so many of those great horses competed at such a high level in the King George and have been successful over the years in that particular race.
Cornelius, you obviously backed Jadami, did you?
I'll tell you what, the commentator was on television was Peter O'Sullivan, wasn't it? And wasn't it Jadami and the fellow? And I think there's a chance that Peter had favoured the fellow. And it was a very tight finish.
Was it Russian Wild, no?
Oh, was it? Oh, well, maybe I've just got my years
such a show-off, Cornelius. Don't worry, he's such a show-off.
It's not. Yeah, I remember I robbed the picture.
Showing off in the saddle, showing off and behind the microphone. As I said to him at an awards ceremony the other day, I won't quote myself exactly because this is a family podcast, but why is he so blinking good at this media stuff as well as he as well as when he was a rider?
Well, I can tell you, it's not because of preparation anyway.
He said it was a lack of competition, that's so and so.
Yeah. He's going around the place like a poor man's Meryl Streep at the minute with awards hanging out of every hand he can carry.
Is there an HR department in this building?
There is, but you won't qualify, I can guarantee you that. Well, listen, Cordy, as you were talking about King George a little bit there, I'm guessing Desert Orca might be your favourite King George winner of all time.
Well, you know, looking through the list, I'll tell you what, if you ask me my absolute favourite King George winner of all time, you've got to go back 42 years, Bachelor's Hall in 1977.
I remember as well.
Favourite of mine. But, Desi, funny if that was it 87 when Desi was beaten by Nupsala. That I remember that being an absolutely, you know, how on earth can he have been beaten by, and at that stage, you know, French horses didn't turn up on a regular basis like that. And 94 is a very memorable King George for me because Barton Bank had won it the year before, trained by David Nicholson, ridden by Adrian Maguire, and then did he fall at the last or the second last the following year, and the David Nicholson got into a bargy match with photographers, and there was lots of hype around Barton Bank that year. That was a particularly memorable race. And then, you know, much closer to home, and not just saying this for Ruby's benefit, but, you know, the fact is that Corto Star, those Corto years in the... You know, so often Corto is thought of as that horse that regained the Cheltenham Gold Cup. But he, you know, he achieved so much away from Cheltenham as well. I'll never forget the day that everyone had written him off and he went to Haydock and he showed he was on the comeback trail there. But, you know, that King George record is extraordinary, isn't it?
It is indeed. And for back to Cornelius Leiser, what's next for you? Do you have any plans yet? I mean, you're obviously going to... Will you have to pay into the races now or will your press pass cover you from...
I've thought of many things of what's going to happen after the 1st of May next year, but that hadn't crossed my mind so far. Gosh. I can tell you the last time I paid... No, I'm not going to go into that. But
I know a few probably, of the backdoor entrances to some of the tracks anyway.
Do you think I could get your place on those... On all those press junkets you go on? Do you think I could get your seat in one of those?
Well, the junkets, as you very, very unfairly call them, those very, Sorry. Very important and detailed and hard-working fact-finding missions. That's the expression you're actually looking for, I think.
Over wine and lunch.
Yes. Well, funnily enough, I know you won't believe me when I say what I'm going to say, but there is a, you know, the boozing days in the media during the day are certainly over. You know, when I first started, there was a bar in every racecourse press room.
I was in the press room in Cheltenham last week and they were serving champagne at 11:30 in the morning.
That's not booze. That's champagne. This is kick off the day. Yeah. They actually have a pay bar then.
I'll tell you what, I missed it. But that's... yeah, you've knocked me down for the second time, Ruby. I'm determined to try and get back up again. But it's relatively unusual now to see people swaying around in the press room in the afternoon, whereas once upon a time, it was practically the norm.
I love that it's relatively unusual.
I thought this was the best new gig of all time.
Yeah. So, Ruby, so you're a bit out of place.
Finding missions. Yeah. I've got to finish this sentence, the last thing I do. As for the fact-finding missions, if there's a little bit of... late night research going on in the bar, then, you know, I suppose so be it.
And okay, well, listen, if you're at a loose end at some stage, we probably do need, I'm going away skiing next week, so we probably need somebody professional to host this show. So you're more than welcome anytime you want to come across for an El Junket to Ireland. You're more than welcome back on this if you do us the pleasure from the horse's mouth. So, but listen, before you go, I better get King George tip off you for this year, because you're going to lead us a lovely segue into the next section, which is the tipping section.
Right. Segway, that's a good word. Can you spell it? Because I've always wondered how you spell it.
I think it's S-E-G-W. It might be E-Y or A-Y. I'm not sure. It's probably A-Y.
No, it might be S-E-G-U-E, actually.
Oh, shit.
It's French, isn't it?
Okay, fair enough.
But
we have a long way to go, yeah, Paddy.
I think, sir. I know it's not, you know, lots of people are going to say surname, but that would be the one for me. I love Lost in Translation, but whether at Kempton, even though it's absolutely pouring with rain in the UK, as in the south of England, as I talked to you, whether, you know, if it was very soft, then obviously that might be a big time against surname. But I just got a feeling he's in such brilliant form at the moment that he could be the one for Kempton.
Okay, well, surname, and you're a surname that we'll never forget, Lysett, Cornelius Lysett. Thanks a million for coming on the show, and hopefully we'll talk to you again soon.
Well, good luck. I hope it goes really well.
See you, Cornelius.
Thanks, Cornelius. Bye-bye.
And now the bit you've all been waiting for, it's on to the tipping section. Well, a horse racing podcast just would not be a racing podcast if it didn't have some tips. And here on From the Horse's Mouth, we're happy to continue that long-standing tradition and do our best. So will we start with the King George or any? What was it? Bachelor's Hall, was it?
Any idea who wrote him, Tom?
Having a notion.
Who trained him?
Having a notion.
Go dinner the way.
It was well before I was born.
It was in
born,
the 40s.
Anyway. You were both around.
It's probably a Mullins, was it?
No, you were probably born, were you?
77? 75 I was born, actually.
Yeah, Paddy was 2 and he can't remember.
Jesus, scandalous. And you call yourself a bookmaker.
It's disgraceful. Imagine that. Imagine how important that was in their house back then.
I know,
David
yeah.
Paul would it sweating over the result of the King George, and you don't even remember.
Me sitting there with me Christmas presents.
Yeah.
Stephen's Day. What did I get when I was 2?
Daddy.
I don't know. Probably some Fisher. Remember Fisher Price?
Yeah.
You probably don't remember Fisher Price.
I don't know. I would have had the little red.
Yeah, probably one of them, I'd say, yeah.
Fisher Price are still around, lads.
Yeah. Yeah, before we go to the tips, actually, can I ask you, what's the worst present you've ever got?
Someone asked me this the other day, and I was obviously a very privileged individual because I can't remember the worst present I ever got.
You're grateful for everything you get.
I'm so grateful.
Yeah, I find it's more about giving than getting. Like, I just think, you know, Christmas time, it's like I prefer to give presents than get presents.
Mm. I can't believe that, but anyway, moving on.
I did
Thomas.
Get a fiver hot wax voucher from my godfather every year, and he obviously bought them in bulk because
hot wax voucher.
It was a record shop in Rathmines.
Jesus Christ!
I'm glad you cleared that up for us.
I clarified that, yeah. But anyway, poor old Uncle Dick, Dick Power.
Dick with the hot wax.
So he used to get me this fiver voucher for Hot Wax Records, and Hot Wax closed down. But for the next 4 or 5 years, I still got a fiver. He obviously bought them in bulk at some stage, so I got a fiver voucher for 4 or 5 years Jeez. After closing. Yeah,
someone gave them to him.
Yeah.
There you go. Anyway, what was yours, Tom?
What was mine? I don't know. I can't remember either. I was an only child, so I kind of nearly always got what I wanted anyway. Just
nearly always.
Yeah.
So you can drop the nearly part there.
Yeah.
Tell us who you fancy for the King George. Anyway, come on. You two that know something about racing.
Well, I wanted to ask, given we're in the presence of such an esteemed driver.
What do you want to ask me? Go on.
Rupert Walsh. Kempton is obviously, people talk about it as being maybe a slightly kind of nuanced track compared to some of the other kind of more galloping tracks. What would be the key attribute you're looking in for a horse to go to the King George?
I think pace. Pace your horses tend to win King Georges more so than sluggers. You will see a lot of horses, plenty of horses who can win King Georges but may not get home in a Gold Cup. And then, like, One Man, Edger Don Bluff, Florida Pearl, Corner Star managed to do it, Best Mate managed to do it, so does Seymour Business. Great horses can do both, but a lot of horses can excel at Kempton and struggle at Cheltenham. So pace is a huge thing.
So this was kind of my angle into it because I wanted to look at Lost in Translation first. Obviously has been very, very impressive, but in the JLT over 2.5 miles last year, was he done for a boot from the last by Defi Desai? Does he lack that little bit of pace?
He was done for it. He was done for it in the Scilly Isles as well. He only ended up winning the Dipper because possibly Defi committed going to the last, got a few lengths in front, then pulled himself up and allowed Lost in Translation back in. But when Lost in Translation stepped up the 3 miles at Aintree last year as a novice, he looked a much better horse. So yeah, he had the he didn't quite have the speed to be good enough at 2.5, and he could be vulnerable to a very pacey individual in Surname.
Yeah, so that brings us on to Surname as our 6-4 favourite now, and he would be the percentage play if you're looking to kind of get stuck in at the top of the market, because I would see Lost in Translation as just being a little bit vulnerable on a track that's turning
look,
all the time.
If you're talking of having a bet, when are we playing this out?
We're playing it out
tonight. Yeah.
If you're having a bet in the King George, you should have it in the next sort of 12 hours, 24 hours, whilst there's still more than 8 horses in it, and go each way on something like
Footpad.
Footpad or a Clan des Aubois or something like that, because I can only see there being only 6-7 runners in the race.
From an each way angle, could I get your general opinion on Thistlecrack? I thought he ran very well behind Paisley Park the last day.
He did. He was second in last year's race. Don't know how he's going to reverse that form with Clan des Aubois. I think Surname, Lost in Translation, Clan des Aubois. There's three, I think, that'll finish in front
is
of Thistlecrack.
Is Thistlecrack not that good, really? Is he not just one of those horses that we got carried away with?
No, we didn't get carried away with him. He was a very good horse, but he's a bit older now. He's had a few injuries, and I just don't think that he would be placed in this year's King George.
Okay, and you're saying Clan des Aubois might be placed. I was saying Clan des Aubois was very impressive last year.
He was. I still think that it was a much weaker race than this year's race.
Have they announced the jockeys?
No. Well, we know what's going to happen. Harry Crobden is going to ride one or the other, and if he doesn't, you'll have Sean Bowen on Surname, and you'll have
Harry Crobden chooses to ride Clan des Aubois, would you be going, Jesus, that's interesting?
I would.
Yeah. You'd ride Surname, would you?
I would, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Nail the colours to the mast then.
Okay, if you wouldn't mind, yeah, the site probably should have said that, but yeah, go on.
I will go, Surname 6-4 unoriginal. I'll take a chance with Thistlecrack each way at 16s of Paddy Power at the minute.
Okay.
I'm looking down here to the site and I can't see each, even though I've told everyone the each way value is now before the field cuts up. If you think there is each way value there somewhere and you fancy one of the longer ones, by all means do it. But to me, Surname 6-4.
Yeah, I was going to tip up Surname, but I think I'm going to tip up Clan des Aubois now because my tips are based on just gut feelings anyway. So
you obviously couldn't get through to anybody.
I couldn't get through to Paddy Desmond now to find out what he actually fancied. So this could be entertaining. We're going to keep track of our tips, apparently, so this could be good. Welsh National is also on there. Well, that's 27th, actually, Welsh National, isn't it? This is actually, speaking of pace, every horse I ever backed in the Welsh National in history has kind of fallen back in the field and never got back into the race. Do you have to be up front in the Welsh National, or am I just imagining that?
No, Chepstow usually does pay if you can race somewhere close to the pace. Having said that, the horse that Paul Carberry won it on from Michael Scudamore, red and white colours, came from Stone Last.
Yeah, that's your man, that Mike Tindall
involved. He came from Stone Last, so that kind of scuppers that whole theory. But yeah, it does pay if you can race a bit closer to the pace. And I'm going to tip Yala Inky each way on his second start for Paul Nicholls. I thought he ran okay in the big handicap in Newbury.
Okay.
Would Chepstow be notably heavier track than some of the others? Does it get quite boggy?
It does, yeah. It gets quite heavy there. Really testing. I always enjoyed riding there. It's a lot of jumping there. Great track. But it does get testing, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I think for me, I genuinely can see it's like I'm on countdown now. I did actually write down Yala Inky before I asked Ruby, so I feel like I'm kind of vindicated if he wins or not.
Writing it down as he says it doesn't really count. Yeah.
And at Potter's Corner as well, with the Christian Williams horse.
Yeah, I thought Steely Edition. I thought it was being really shrewd and picked out Steely Edition when I was looking at the race post this morning online, and then came onto the Paddy Power site and saw it's into nines now from 20s. So I don't know if I'd. Maybe nines is okay.
It's a favourite very short though, Elegant Escape.
Yeah, Elegant Escape is fours. Yeah, sure. But I thought Steely Edition was interesting. He won a handicap chase, a novice handicap chase at Chepstow last year over 2.7 miles, and he looked like he'll stay really well now. He got thumped in a listed race the last time, which now McGinty finished second. And there's kind of a form line between the two of them. Now McGinty bet him in a handicap chase last season as well. The only thing, if you fancy Now McGinty, is I'd be very wary about a stowaway getting 3.5 miles.
On heavy ground.
They generally tend to fall in the hole. Outlander, who he's a full brother to, by the way, was one of the few ones to get 3 miles well. Hidden Cyclone couldn't really do it. Champagne Fever couldn't do it. There was a good few of the really good ones that really struggled once they kind of went past 2.5. Would be the one concern for me. But Steely Edition.
There's the horse breeder coming.
The horse breeder, I know. Exactly what I was thinking. Yeah, do you ever see Tom at the race? You see him in the background there, pretending to be busy, pretending to work when they're interviewing trainers and stuff in the background. You just see his massive head behind all the all the people. And there's always wearing a tweed coat and a trench coat. And he just looks. Do you bring binoculars to the races?
Very rarely.
But you do. You own binoculars.
Yeah.
Who owns binoculars these days?
A good few people, I'd say.
And do you watch the screen on binoculars, or do you watch the horses?
A bit of both. Depends.
Yeah. Do you notice when he's at the races or in the studio or not in the studio or in the office, he wears the glasses?
Yeah.
Now we're on TV, he's wearing contacts.
This isn't podcast, Ruby.
Well, there's a camera over there.
Yeah, but nobody's going to see that.
Yeah, you know, you just, you know, see into his image. So he gets to progress to the race. He puts on the glasses for the really sophisticated look.
Yeah.
The collar up on the tweed coat.
I know.
Binoculars dangling with all the badges on them.
There's something in it, though. I tell you what, something in it. Like, I mean, if you give that impression.
Fake it till you make it, lads.
Well, that's the thing. If you give the impression of being invincible.
It's the first thing I learned off Paddy when I started working here, is just kind of bluff your way through it and you'll be all right.
At least you come up with the whole stowaway angle. Paddy is wondering what the hell stowaway is.
I was thinking, like, how could you stow away on a horse? Like, I mean, that'd be pretty obvious. Like, it's there's two jockeys, obviously it's going to struggle.
Anyway, can bluff and do a whole new level.
So listen, that's two races now. Anything else over Christmas? We're going to Leopardstown focus mainly, but anything else around Christmas at all that you fancy?
Given that Ruby was slagging me off for being at the races and looking like a bit of an idiot within a tweed coat.
I said no such thing.
You were implying.
That's not what he said, but it's what you heard. That's the most important.
John Durkin Day. Thought we learned a few interesting bits and pieces. Thought presenting Percy ran a lovely race in the John Durkin, finishing third on comeback. Yes, no, agreed.
I thought maybe not. Fine.
Fine. Yeah. Jeez, well, the connections were kind of shaking hands and nearly slapping each other on the back anyway afterwards. They thought it was great.
Well, compared to his last start in the Gold Cup, he would probably be slapping each other on the back.
Yeah, but he obviously retained something then.
Yeah, I thought he ran fine. I thought the second is just, he's in a good horse to runner up, but is he a Gold Cup horse?
I don't know. Anyway, it was Ruby crabbing anyway, any presenting Percy angle for the Savills Chase anyway, but also after racing, there's a few horses working after racing. Willie worked
here
a few.
Here he goes again.
It's all the public. We're allowed to watch it. Ruby Road, Shaquem Pourceau. Paul Road, did he ride Album Photo?
You were watching the work, you tell us.
Well, no, you were riding it. You tell us. Go on.
But he couldn't see what was behind him, I'd say.
I'm trying to ask you, what did you learn anything? Was there a significant piece of work done? Because before the work happened, Shaquem Pourceau was 10 to 11 for the old Dial-a-Bet, the Paddy's Rewards Chase, and that evening he was 4 to 7, so somebody thought somewhere that he did a fairly nice piece of work.
I'd say it was you moving the stand with your binoculars.
Yeah, in exactly. The dark. That's why you brought
Paddy Power App in the other hand. Yeah. We have you copped, don't worry.
Go on, tell us then.
Yeah, he worked really well. So did Album, Kenboy, who else in the work? Blazer and Cadmium. They all, you know, they went really well. They were only doing a 3/4 speed. It was nothing. They weren't asked any major question, but yeah, we were happy with how they went.
Why did you bring them to the race course to do that?
It's like playing a friendly match.
Is it just to get used to going on the truck and all that?
It's the day away, the travelling, at the races, the noise, take the little bit of the fizz and buzz out of them. So you're running back in a big day like Leopardstown, that it's not quite first time out.
And is Shaquem Pourceau like the real deal, as they say in inverted commas?
Oh, sure, he could be. His form is saying yes, he is. He beat Defi Desai in Punchestown. You know, his form is rock solid.
Mm. So thanks for that. So obviously, if you're going to follow those tips, just bear in mind who's given them and do it responsibly and all that kind of stuff. And we'll see after a few weeks whether you should be following them or not. But anyway, thank you very much for that, gentlemen. That moves us on very quickly and very swiftly and very naturally to Why the Long Face. Jesus, that was subtle. Right, well, I don't just think that, you know, we're impossible to piss off or anything like that. So I want to ask each of us, it's a therapeutic session, if you like, to get something off your chest. Ruby, you look tired and relaxed there.
I'm not. What's been pissing me off this week?
Well, I can imagine we could dedicate a whole show to that every week. But if you don't mind, I'm going to start this week. I'll tell you what's pissing me off. There's two things, but I'm going to do one of them because I'm going to keep one in the bank because it pisses me off every week. But the thing, particularly at this time of year, I've been doing a little bit of driving around during the day, which is a pain in the arse, right? Especially this time because people are going shopping and stuff. But at the risk of sounding like your old man, it's like you're in traffic, right? And one person just has to go on the red light and get into the yellow box. And it just has a knock-on effect and it just causes everyone stress and hassle. And you're sitting in the traffic jam, the loud beep, and you're kind of going, I can't go anywhere. And it just gets into this situation where it's kind of Christmas and you want to be full of Christmas cheer, but people just start annoying you and then you get annoyed at people. And I just find it very stressful.
You're very wound up over that, aren't you?
I actually am, yeah. But thinking about getting public transport.
I'm wound up because you robbed my idea.
Is that what you're going to give out about?
Traffic.
And I robbed your tip earlier as well.
I know, yeah. Just like that. I should have known better. I'm in this broadcasting game now. I should have known when I came in. Do not tell the co-host anything.
Give nothing away.
Rookie mistake.
I've nothing really that's annoying me too much, but I've got
drains
something
in your house, huh?
Well, the drains, yeah. The drains are blocked in my house.
Well,
and
tell us about that.
Well, like, it's a very annoying thing that the drains are blocked and there's water
the
coming up.
Now again, or
it's the shower, the sink.
And the toilet upstairs and downstairs. Hopefully my landlord isn't listening.
Do you live with just a group of lads or what? Or
yeah, two lads I was in college with, yeah.
Right.
And
would any of them have like taken a shite in the shower or anything like that?
Possibly. They could have put anything down there.
Did you?
No. Okay. Like it's been when you're in the shower using it, the toilet starts to gurgle. Sounds like it doesn't sound great. So we've got an old
What else would you be doing in the shower other than using the shower?
it's a fair challenge.
You're in the shower using it.
I was just hanging out
in the shower here, lads.
yeah, listening to the radio. But so we've got the drain man coming. But I'm kind of over that now. We had a vent before we started the show. But what it doesn't annoy me, but I don't understand it. Antlers on cars.
Yeah, my kid asked me that today. Why don't we have a Rudolph car? And I was here because it's stupid. Like, why would a car be Rudolph? We only run over a deer, and he started crying, and I felt bad. So I was actually collecting him from school because he was sick. But it's actually the traffic's fault because I was annoyed because the traffic, and then I took it out my kid, which is not great, and then he started crying and whatever. Anyway,
you just have a bad work-life balance, Paddy.
I think so. Yeah,
not stressing work. You out.
So Ruby, I can't believe you're the happiest of the lot of us today. Nothing too major.
Swinging along, Paddy, not a bother on me.
Right, okay.
He's itching to get out of here, that's all.
Thank you for
itching to get out of here. Why the long face? I had one thing that was annoying me, that's the traffic. I managed to navigate my way through housing estates to get here. I was kind of impressed with that, actually.
Yeah, fair play to you.
And then Paddy robbed my idea, so that was the whole, you know, research done. Why the long face? And Paddy, as usual, mugged me.
There you go. On the line as well. I tell you, the sweetest way to win.
Typical
bookie. Yeah, just picked your pocket at the last minute. Right, now it is time to get into our virtual time machine and relive a wonderful moment from racing history. So take me away. I don't mind, but you better promise me I'll be back in time. I gotta get back in time. Down to the final fence here. Quarto Star one fence between he and Jumping History. Long Run is running on at the last. Quarto Star by two lengths. Long Run is getting to him. He's about 2.5 lengths down and staying on. Quarto Star, can he be the King of Kings? Quarto Star for King George the Fifth. Quarto Star, a sporting sensation here at Kempton. He beats Long Run again. Quarto Star at the age of 11, 5 years older than the second horse. The Jumping Hero becomes a legend at Kempton Park. What a win that was. Ruby was a bit special, I'd imagine. Do you remember that day well?
Oh, I remember it well, Paddy. It was a great day. What a horse. We had brilliant days there, but
Did you fancy him that day?
No. Of course I fancied him, but I did think Long Run would have improved from Haydock and could turn it around. Paul was quite sweet in him, but he was magic. He jumped like a buck and, as always, gave everything he had.
And is there a loyalty thing there? For example, like you're going for 5 in a row on him, but just say there was a surname 6-4 favourite in the race and you were offered the ride. Would you just ride what you think is going to win, or would you just stay loyal to him? Like,
yeah, I'd ridden what I thought was going to win.
Really? Yeah.
I could offer again Fly Drive Faheen in a champion hurdle.
Yeah.
Business is business.
Business is business, I guess. And so he's, you've said it before, he's probably the greatest chaser anyway you've ever ridden. Anyway, he's the best horse you've ever ridden.
Arguably, yes. He was an incredible race horse.
It's such a stupid George's question, really, isn't it? Like, I mean, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, play that in any podcast.
You were just saying there a minute ago, the greatest achievement that day was not winning 5 King Georges. It was actually...
won the King George at 5-3, and I do believe I made a 20-4 flight from Heathrow.
It's pretty good. So you enjoyed the celebrations then?
Out the door, so 100 miles.
It was a Clive Smith, and he's standing there with his empty glass, or his glass champagne, waiting for you to come in. He's had it holding your
jumped
full glass
off,
there. And
got the presentation.
Oh,
back
Ruby! Oh, he's gone.
Tell you what's better, they were filming that Jump Boys program at the time as well. Right. So they were standing outside waiting for the interview. I just went running past them, head for Heathrow. Delighted with myself, but I was thinking 20-4, Dublin half five.
And you probably get away with, like, no one in the airport. Like, there's no punters in the airport at that stage. You just get in the flight and go. It's not everyone go, oh, Ruby, well done, and all that kind of stuff.
Stephen's like, day, very little traffic control and whatever else. Like, but you're, like, legging it, get out of here before the last, get to the airport and enjoy it when you get home.
And you're saying to me the other day that one Christmas... You had to go to England to make sure you got to ride in Stephen's Day. Yeah.
Fog and
that wasn't that year.
No, that was a couple of years before that.
Yeah. Bless you. That was a very quiet sneeze.
Quick recovery.
Yeah, quick recovery. I tell you, he was straight back in the irons after that one. But so you're Christmas Eve. You're here like shite. I mightn't be able to get across because
first year we were married. I was supposed to go on to do Carlo to Gillian's parents for Christmas, and fog was terrible. So Gillian rang a cousin of her mother's who was a pilot, and he said if you can go, go. So we decided driving to Carlo, drove to Dublin Airport, and went to England for Christmas.
And did you just have Christmas in like a travel lodge or something, or?
Oh, Ryan McKay.
Went to stay with him. That was grand, yeah.
We got up Christmas morning, like first year married, no presents, no nothing. It was, you know.
And did the McCoys have kids at that stage? Because that'd be a bit weird. Look what Santa brought, Ruby and Gillian Walsh.
I don't think he was born, no.
Yeah, okay. So. Well, that's it from Racing Goal this week. But if you want one of your favourite racing memories featured on the show, just get in contact with us by, I don't know, Twitter or something or whatever.
One of those things.
One of those social media. Well, you're the social
Insta.
Media guru.
You're the Insta, Insta dude, aren't you?
Yeah. Snap.
Who's he?
I've got the power. Yeah. Now, just before we go, we do have some time to answer some listeners' questions. We're going to do this every week, by the way, so get used to it. We're going to be answering the questions of some of our many millions of listeners. So,
do you have a post box? Like, do you have a PO box number?
Well, I have a couple of them actually, just because of you have to be inundated
tax reasons
with volume. Yeah.
PPJ.
So now let's see. First question here, dear from the horse's mouth. We all loved Ruby Walsh the jockey. I don't know who would like to speak for everyone. I'm not sure anyway. But which horse does he wish he could have ridden?
Istabrak.
Istabrak. Okay, that was quite nice. Have you thought about that before, or has that just come to the top of your head?
Just came to the top of my head like that.
I'd say you've never been asked that question.
No, I love these. Like, dear Oprah, yeah. How can I get a new bathroom? Go on.
Okay, you want to be sorting out the drains.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, go on.
Dear from the horse's mouth, my wife dragged me along to Panto recently, and surprisingly, I loved it. If you were in a Panto, which characters would you play?
What do you call your man? Climbed up to stock.
Jack the Beanstalk?
Jack.
Right. Tom?
I don't know, I haven't a clue.
I was on stage at a Panto
I think he'd make a great Shrek.
Me? Yeah, I probably would,
yeah. I was on stage the night at a Panto. I was at the Cheerios Panto out in Kilmainham Hospital, and they'd have a dad section.
Was on stage.
Where the dads have to go up and dance on the stage. So I got up there and gave it a little whirl, shaking that booty.
Who would you play?
I'd play, I don't know. I think I'd probably be, do you know the way in every Panto there's the Maureen Potter character? Do you know that the hurdy, granny hurdy gurdy, that kind of one, the drag queen type of person? Okay, I'd play Aladdin. it was a great finish to the show. So for the listener, if there is one, still listening after that section, I just want to say thanks a million for bearing with us. Enjoy the first show. Thanks very much, Ruby. Thanks very much, Tom. And remember, we will be back with another episode of From the Horse's Mouth in the new year. I can't give you an exact time because I don't even know what day it is because it's Christmas. And you know the way you forget what's going on in the world. But until then, Tom.
All the best.
Would you give us a nice song there?
No, Ruby.
You chose that one.
It's creepy enough, isn't it?
You said Christmas time. It came into my head, you know.
Okay.
In the festive mood. Can you not sing, no? Surely you can sing, Betty.
I could sing. Snow is falling all around us. Merry Christmas, everybody, and a Happy New Year.
Happy Christmas, folks.
Happy Christmas.
From the Horse's Mouth is a Muddy Knees Media production for Paddy Power.